Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we're going to have a different type of discussion on this radio show, and it's going to be about targeting incarcerated individuals. Are they trying to rehabilitate them, or are they just trying to punish them? We're going to be bringing awareness through those who have lived experience of injustices. But I'd like to start off by talking about prisoners that I have worked with throughout the years. And there's one particular prisoner I want to talk about. When we talk about targeting incarcerated individuals, there's usually much more behind it. There's usually something that's going on. And these are the type of things that we don't hear about. There was an incident where actually a family member of a victim worked for the Department of Corrections. And although that individual may have been working on the East Coast, they had her down as working on the West Coast. Although the residence is on the East Coast. Tell me how that works. I don't know. But I will say, I remember several years ago, I myself had hired an attorney from Washington State, Elizabeth Kelly, as a matter of fact, and I'll mention her name because I wouldn't want anybody to retain her for anything. She's a scam artist. And I'd like to have her challenge that because I have documentation. She herself had her office and her residence in Washington. And on her website, she also had that she had an office in New York. But after scamming, when I sent a letter to the Bar Association in her state, they said that she did not have a license to practice in Washington State. So I checked out New York, and she didn't have a license to practice in New York. So some of the advocates helped me to track down her whereabouts as far as her office goes, her practice. And we came to find out she had a license to practice in Ohio, but she didn't live in Ohio. She lived in the state of Washington. This is only a small example of corrupt lawyers, and we have corruption in government. We have corruption in a lot of places. And these are some of the things I'd like to talk about today. There was a prisoner who had never been involved with the law before, had never been in trouble, had a good job, was in college, did all the things that were right, and he got stumbled. But sometimes people can't be satisfied with an individual who goes to prison for life or life without parole or even on death row for a first offense. They're not satisfied with that. They want to make their lives miserable while they're inside. And I remember the same woman that worked for the Department of Corrections in a trial transcript, the last sentence that was said was, "I hope you never adjust behind those prison walls." Now, this was some 30 years ago, and that person never adjusted. They didn't allow it. Again, using your friends, your family, or anyone you can think of that's connected with you in some way or another to make someone's life miserable. And these people would be the ones to say they're Christians, though lying through their teeth. We have a lot of that going on in this country. We have a lot of that going on in this country. And we wonder why there's so many suicides in the prisons. When people are targeted and they're prevented from doing anything, when most of the time they're spending their time in the hole, or they're spending their time on restrictive blocks because of bogus reports or because of refusing to double cell or for some other crazy, stupid, ignorant reason, the people overseeing decide they want to do these things. We reach out to people for help, and many people don't respond, those who are influential, those who have some kind of influence, those who have some kind of leadership. You reach out to legal services, places like that, And this is another thing. There's such a thing as legal services in Massachusetts and also in New York. But they, what they do, many prisoners who have contacted them for help, they're not lawyers. A lot of them are paralegals. But a lot of these prisoners never see any lawyer from these legal services that they reach out to. They never see a lawyer. But the people that are advocating for them may write a letter or two, or may give them advice, or may make some calls. But when someone is desperate enough to reach out for help from any law firm, any legal services, any form of government, they're reaching out because they're desperate. We have prisoners across this country that are so desperate. And as one criminal defense lawyer from Texas said, Gary Cohen, one of the things he said was, it's a shame because he himself, as a criminal defense lawyer out of Texas, has seen it all too often. He said, if you're of color, or even if you're not of color, if you're indigent, if you don't have the money to get a lawyer or to hire a good lawyer, you can believe you're going to be spending your time in prison on death row, life without, whatever the case may be. People are suffering, and they're crying out for help, and they're not getting it. Many are not getting it. And those who do advocate and contact the Department of Corrections, a lot of times they're being lied to. This happens. They're being lied to. And when that happens, you need to let them know. You need to let those who are reaching out to the DOC, you need to let them know they're lying. You need to ask them to check further into it. But getting back to this individual who was never involved with the law or substances of any sort, this individual has been in almost 30 years. They have prevented him from doing anything, prevented him from participating in educational programs, prevented him from participating in any work programs. They have moved him from prison to prison. They have tried to force him to double cell when there were evaluations indicating that they were not to double cell because they were not mentally or physically able to. But because they refused, they've spent most of their years in solitary confinement or on restrictive blocks, not allowed to take any kind of programs at all. Now, there's a lot of changes that are being made around the country, a lot of changes being made, positive changes. You know, the Department of Justice, even they themselves are coming up with new solutions, new ideas, new ways to try to eliminate the escalating mass incarceration that we have in this country. Governors in certain states, even in Massachusetts, Governor Maura Healey has been doing a lot of good, releasing or preparing to release thousands of prisoners who are incarcerated for substances, marijuana primarily, trying to make things more normal, more in sync with other countries in the way they sentence people to prison. But when incarcerated individuals are targeted and prevented from doing anything while incarcerated, it's being done purposely by the Department of Corrections. Is it certain officials that are doing it? Is it all of them that are doing it? Is it just a small handful that are trying to prevent targeted incarcerated individuals from doing anything so that when they do have an opportunity to go up for parole or to participate in any kind of programs or releases, clemencies, you know, compassionate releases, things like this, they have nothing to show. They have nothing to show for all the years they've been in except grievances, many unanswered, or civil suits, which many have been prevented. There have been prisoners across this country who have not been able to get attorneys to help them with their issues. so they have tried to do it on their own. But one thing that people don't realize, even our government employees throughout the country, a lot of them don't realize this. But when individuals try to file their own lawsuits, a lot of times they're thrown into the hole. They're put in solitary confinement, while the Department of Corrections administrators, officials, file motions, or their lawyers file motions to have the cases dismissed. And that's why a lot of these individuals, they don't have an opportunity to even fight their own cases. Because once their case is dismissed, they can try to appeal the court's decision. But now we also have to look at judges. A lot of judges will side with, even though they know they're wrong, a lot of judges will side with the Department of Corrections or their lawyers. Because a lot of judges look at prisoners just like people in society. They stereotype and they look at prisoners as being, as prisoners call themselves, as animals. Prisoners say it all the time. They're treated like animals. And I mention Frans Douw all the time because Frans Douw from Amsterdam is a 27-year warden who talks about it all the time, how he treats and his staff treated their prisoners like human beings. They treated them with respect, and that's what they got in return. So when we hear prison officials and people in the prisons in the United States talking about prisoners attacking them or riots taking place or hunger strikes taking place, we have to look at this. Something is not right. What are we doing about it? What are we doing about it? Are you calling your legislative members and challenging the Department of Corrections? Or are you just sitting back and ignoring it? Hold on, we'll take a break. Well, sorry about that. That was an advocate calling in right now. But as I was saying, these are the things that are happening right now. Now, when somebody incarcerated is deprived, they're serving a life or life without parole. They're taking off the block of lifers, especially lifers of their age, the elderly, 50 and over. When they're taken off those blocks and they're put on blocks with young, young people, that is very sad because no older prisoner deserves to be on a cell or in a block or in a unit with younger prisoners. This is very serious. And these are some things we have to look at. It's not fair. But when you put somebody over 50 on a block with young prisoners in their 20s and early 30s, what does that tell you? Something is not right, especially when it's very, very few of these older prisoners on those blocks. When you try to force people to double cell when they clearly have been evaluated and has been recommended that they have their single cell status, but yet the prison officials still want to put them on single cell, want to put them on cells in cells with other people, that almost reminds me of the gladiators that want to see something going on so that they can get entertained. It's not right. We're going to have a caller, 508. Do you want to state your name, please?
Hi, Leona. It's Donna. I'm in my car. My husband's in Whole Foods getting a few items. How are you today?
Donna, I want to thank you so much for coming on because I want to, at some point in time, have you on the show again. Be my guest because we need to start talking about mental health issues. And this is Donna Wynette, and you can let the audience know about your organization, Donna. I'm very honored to have her even calling in.
Thank you, Leona. Well, I'm the founder and the director of Families and Friends of Individuals with Mental Illness, and we advocate for those with this serious mental illness who are incarcerated. And I believe that these people who are very sick with a disease, a serious disease, they did not choose, they should not be punished. They need treatment rather than punishment. So my organization, my grassroots organization, we're fighting for to obtain a continuum of care across, for those who are justice involved. As it is now, it's within the criminal justice system, but we really would love to see community-based facilities. If they need to be secured, that's fine, you know, for safety reasons, but they really need humane treatment. And as everyone who is incarcerated, humane treatment is the bottom line. But with people with a serious mental illness that they haven't chosen, you know, deserve to have the basic and comprehensive, beyond basic, health care. And it has to be not just medication alone, but physical health care as well.
Thank you so much, Donna. And this is truly what we're trying to bring awareness about to the audience. And audience, I want you to please absorb everything that's being said, because we're not talking about just people that have committed an offense. We're talking about people who committed offenses in at a time especially when they were not rational. And one of the things that we have in this country, as all of you know, we have serious, serious epidemics of mental illnesses and addictions. You know, I was watching the news. This is the second time I've watched the news to hear about a family member, you know, killing their own family member. This is not something that somebody would do out of the ordinary. This is a mental health issue. Had it been addressed long before this happened, perhaps it wouldn't have happened. And this is what we have in this country. However, once they go to prison, they should be getting the treatment, the rehabilitation that they are deserving of, because it's supposed to be the Department of Corrections, not the Department of Corruptions, not the Department of Deceptions, not the Department of Lies, not the Department of Alleged Suicides, when in fact it could be homicide or vice versa. This is something that's going on, and as I was mentioning earlier, this individual I was speaking of, an evaluation was done, and it was highly recommended that he be single cell. Now, we know, advocates in Massachusetts know, that there are hundreds of cells that are not being used, underutilized, and there's no reason why after 15 or 20 years, an individual who has been having their own single cell status should be forced to double cell, especially when a psychological evaluation was done by a competent psychiatrist. But now, because of pressure being put on them, they are going to be setting up another psychiatric evaluation for the individual, which to me, once an evaluation is done, diagnosing someone with a psychological issue, it shouldn't have to be reevaluated by another psychiatrist when in fact, this person has already been diagnosed, and just because they're being transferred to another prison doesn't mean they have to be evaluated again. So these are some of the issues that we need to discuss. Now, when I speak of targeted individuals, I'm not just talking about the evaluations. I'm talking about individuals who have been deprived educational programs, who have been permanently damaged by an incompetent prison contracted providers. And if you go on the internet and you type in how many times has WellPath, contracted prison provider, been sued, it will say over 1,300 and something times. When a psychological or medical provider, contracted provider, is sued that many times for permanent damages, for even the death of some prisoners, you don't look to have their psychiatrist do any evaluations, nor does anybody want to be operated on them. Now, this same individual that I'm speaking of was not only diagnosed by a competent psychiatrist from a former Department of Corrections medical provider, which was mental health management. They worked with the Department of Corrections prior to this current one with WellPath. But these people they gave a competent evaluation, a detailed one, a thorough one. And these are the ones, unfortunately, that don't get contracts when there's cheaper contracted providers coming forth. And again, WellPath is the cheapest, I believe, and they have done a lot of damage to a lot of people. These are some of the things that I want everyone to think about. I would love to have all of you contact your government officials, your legislative members, your lawmakers, and talk to them about the money that you're spending, taxpayer dollars, going into the Department of Corrections around the country to see nothing done, but a lot worse happening. Is it rehabilitation or is it punishment? And the people incarcerated with mental illnesses, are they being punished because they are mentally ill? Are they being punished because they're not wanting to double cell? Or are they being punished because they're incarcerated? And this is something we see a lot of. Donna Wynette has been working with the Bridgewater State. She's been trying to work with the Department of Mental Health, and she's been trying to work with other organizations in hospitals. And Donna, if you want to talk a little bit about that, please do.
Yeah, you said you always have so many rich nuggets to talk about, Leona. One of the things that struck me is that people, you know, they judge these individuals without understanding, you know, how mental illness works. And many times so-called crimes or alleged crimes are committed under the weight of psychosis. And psychosis is not understanding, not knowing what is real and what is not. And there's a psychiatrist in Newton, Massachusetts, and his name is Dr. Stuart Grayson. And he states that those with psychosis and serious mental illness, they lose the capacity. They have no capacity to know what is real and what's in their head. And I think that's a succinct statement that explains what often happens. You know, I've been working with this population of persons, individuals with serious mental illness. I see how depressed they are. I see how broken they are. And, you know, yet the world can judge them. I've seen hearings where psychologists, you know, and a crime hasn't even been, assigned yet. They haven't gone to trial. And that psychologist of that facility, of Bridgewater State Hospital, will call it murder instead of incident, or in some kinder diplomatic language. There is one psychiatrist who I admire because, you know, even though he didn't side with the patient at Bridgewater State Hospital, I could just see him thinking of the words he was saying, being diplomatic and not wanting to hurt that person. And I've watched these mentally ill persons that I see all the time because I visit there frequently, and I see them hanging their heads, and I see them, you know, trying to articulate and fight for themselves to get moved on to a better situation at the Department of Mental Health, where by all accounts and by the Disability Law Center accounts, and most especially we family members of Bridgewater State Hospital patients, we're a very close-knit group. We work together as advocates. So even when a loved one is moved on to DMH or another facility, they stay with us. They stick with us, and they make sure they continue to advocate with us. And every one of those family members whose loved one has gone to the Department of Mental Health, they tell us A, B, C, D, E, F, G how much better it is at the Department of Mental Health facility than at Bridgewater State Hospital, which is a penal institution with penal policies that do not serve those with serious mental illness. It's a crime in itself in a way, Leona.
It really is. And you know, the thing is, I know in one situation, even with my own situation, it was, and I've heard, not only did he bring this up at the time, but I've heard this from others too, and I've heard from other prisoners and also advocates, when they say that during the time that they're doing all of these things and these thoughts and everything, in actual, it's almost like they're on the outside looking in, and they can't do anything about it. They don't feel that they're in their bodies at the time. This is what a lot of them feel like. It's like the psychiatrist stated, the individual was suffering from severe depressive episode with psychotic behavior, which did not allow for comprehension of the consequences of what was going on. So these people are hurting so much, and to be hurting to begin with, and then to go to prison and to be punished over the already awareness of what they've done is traumatic, more trauma to them. But this is happening with so many. Go ahead, Donna.
They carry that trauma with them after the fact. You know, if they have moved on, they still carry that trauma of what they have gone through at Bridgewater State Hospital. You know, there's forced chemical restraints, which are actually illegal and they get away with. I don't understand it. It's been reported over and over to the legislator by the Disability Law Center. But there's ill treatment. My own loved one, he went in physically healthy, mentally unraveled, and he had perfect teeth. He was a young man, and he's, you know, they're having to take all of his teeth out. One fell out bloody in the middle of a meal when I was visiting him. Last night, he had a tooth break off because they refused to give him the dental care. And that has been reported by Senator Warren and Senator Markey, you know, the lack of dental care. This, again, is under the care of the lack of care of WellPass. And the family members, we met with George Dintoli, who was correct care recovery. I think he really wanted to see Bridgewater State Hospital as a hospital. And we met with Kevin Ann Huckshorn, and she really was a very kind, compassionate administrator. So in the early days, in 2017, when Governor Baker allotted the $17 million to take the DOC, the Department of Corrections, basically mostly out of there, but still policy run, you know, there was a great honeymoon period under their supervision. They have left, WellPass, you know, took over, and it's just been downhill. And the founder of Correct Care Recovery Systems, now only a consultant, as is Kevin Ann Huckshorn, and he was shocked that we had to fight for blankets in a hospital, that there were inadequate blankets to keep these patients warm. We have had to fight. And you know, while we were on this call, you know, they had been told, well, we've gotten meals with the families. We've gotten blankets and milk. And I said, yes, but we had to fight and fight and fight to get them 2 helpings of milk per day, which they were supposed to be doing. I fought it for 4 years, Leona. And then, you know, as our advocacy grew, other families members jumped in with me. And, you know, we had to fight for blankets. We had to fight for visitation. They tried to curtail our visitation every which way. It was so chaotic. They changed it within just a few months. 3 times, nobody knew what, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. The people who worked there, it was the family members were confused because it got boom, 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 changed. So they were doing everything to take away our visitation. And boy, did I fight hard on that one. Because, you know, when you're Donna Winant, which is me, you don't mess with family involvement.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what I think is happening too now, Donna, is around the country, as I said earlier, the Department of Justice and even the governors in some states, like Maura Healey, and others like her, they're doing some really good work in their state and with the penal system. And, you know, the Department of Corrections, let's face it, and these large corporations, they know they're making a lot of money off of mass incarceration. And so what happens is, I believe, they're going to try to make, because I've heard this from other prisoners recently too, they're going to try to make these prisoners, they're going to try to make their lives worse so they can provoke them into doing something wrong. And once they have done something wrong, then they can say, well, this is why we have to keep these people in prison. And this is why I think it's so unnecessary for nothing to be done in the DOC. You know, instead of making things better, rehabilitating, they're doing more punishment, and they're doing more of these things here. Maura Healy, as they say, she's been working on releasing prisoners who are in for substances, or marijuana primarily. But then we have to look at these people that are incarcerated that have mental illnesses, and perhaps getting them in separate prisons just for the mentally ill, or separate blocks. I mean, putting them all together is not helping. And Bridgewater State Hospital, as you mentioned once before, needs to fall under the guidelines of the Department of Mental Health. And the Department of Mental Health needs to start looking at establishing more mental health facilities. And this is where the taxpayer dollars should be going, on mental health facilities around the country. I hate to say it, but Department of Corrections is not the place for all this funding to be going. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, at one time, there used to be the director of volunteer programs. That was Bill Milhone. He ended up becoming an employee with the Department of Corrections. So he was the director of volunteer programs, paid director, which pretty much makes him an employee now. And he's since left. I believe he retired, and there's a new person, Harrington. But what I'm saying is, the department's getting funded for having programs, and yet they're bringing in volunteers to do these programs. So where is the funding going? That's one. The Department of Corrections has WellPath in a lot of prisons around the country. WellPath has over 1,300 lawsuits filed against them. So why is the department continuing to use them to do the evaluation and do the medical work on these prisoners, only to permanently damage them or cause their death? So the department's not really focused on rehabilitating or doing the right thing by the incarcerated. So when we have a Department of Corrections that are feeling that way, and then we have people in society that are feeling that way, nothing's happening. But one of the things I noticed recently, they talked about in an article that by keeping these people incarcerated is not helping the communities either, because they're finding that the crime is right now, they're finding that these people that have been in for so many years need to start being released, and they need to start getting into programs outside the penal system. We just can't continue to have mass incarceration with no rehabilitation or very little programs for these individuals. Just can't. But audience, I want to let you know, I want to let anyone listening in, that even though you may not be an advocate, you may not even be that interested in those people who are behind the bars, but consider it, perhaps, how would you feel if it was someone in your family? How would you feel if it was your son or your daughter, your niece or your nephew, your grandchild, a brother, a sister, husband, a wife? You wouldn't want to see them going through a lot of pain and sorrow and suffering once they've already been sentenced and they're serving their time. I'm sure you wouldn't want that. And if you did see it, I'm sure you'd be reaching out to anyone and everyone that could be of help to you or to your loved one. We're not saying to free people when they've committed crimes. All we're saying is that while they're inside, help them to get the treatment that they need. Help them to get that rehabilitation. Help them to get the right things that they need. Because it's not only those on the inside, it's those on the outside. We have such an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses that eventually all of these people on the outside that are suffering from some kind of mental illnesses illness, eventually they're going to end up in prison if there's no facilities on the outside to address these issues. And mental health in this country does not seem to be a priority. It does not seem to be a priority with our government. So in order for it to become a priority, we all need to make phone calls. And you don't have to leave your home to do this. Just go on the internet or even go in the phone book and look up the legislative members, lawmakers. You know, I actually sent a message today to Robert Kennedy Jr. I actually sent a message to him because my family was always, always, always supporters of the Kennedy family, John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. Unfortunately, their lives ended early, but we were supporters of them. And I felt really bad because hearing Robert Kennedy Jr. speaking recently about the January 6th insurrection, I just wrote to him and I let him know it's not going to help his campaign. I let him know about the family that I knew because I was born and raised 6 miles from the compound. And Ted Kennedy used to come to a club on our street all the time, and the nieces and nephews, and maybe Robert Jr. But I would love to support him because I believe in the Kennedy family, and unfortunately, they seem to have changed, the younger generation. And that's what we have in the communities today. We have a lot of kids out in the communities, the younger generation of those who have since passed on, or those who are serving time in prison, or those who haven't gone to prison, but they don't know how to control the younger ones. We need role models. We really need role models. But we also have to look at the fact that a lot of these kids are probably suffering from some mental illness as well. A lot of them. Growing up without fathers, growing up in drug-infested communities, watching our Republican and Democratic parties fighting and bashing one another like children themselves. A lot of the pastors and priests are out there, they're not talking about these kids as humans, they're talking about them as thugs. Not all pastors and priests, but there are some that are. You don't talk about the younger generation like that when we ourselves as adults cannot handle or manage or cope with what's going on around us in the country today. But getting back to the problems that we're suffering with targeting individuals with mental illnesses behind those prison walls rather than to rehabilitate them, but to punish them for not wanting to be around others, for them to want to be in their single cells, for them to want to be participating in programs, and then to be damaged physically or mentally by contracted agencies that have so many lawsuits filed against them and seem to be getting away with it. We have to look at all of these things. There are so many people incarcerated that are really evil, that are really dangerous. And yet we have a Department of Corrections administration that focuses on people just wanting their single cell status, just wanting to take programs, not wanting to be bothered and not wanting to be placed with younger people when they're in their 50s and over. What does that tell us about the Department of Corrections when they're more focused on people that are doing absolutely nothing wrong, but simply asking to be left alone in their single cell in their programs, rather than to try to deal with and rehabilitate and work with these violent ones? It doesn't make sense. The last thing I would want to do is be putting all my attention on those that are good. If anything, I would show respect to them because they are trying to serve their time without incident. I would respect them. And many guards have, many correctional officers have shown respect to those who are trying to just serve their time while others are trying to make their lives miserable. And this is something that needs to stop. So audience, I'm asking you to call in if you have anything you want to say, feedback, or if you want to make recommendations or whatever. The call-in number is 657-383-1630. Again, 657-383-1630. 1630. Your opinion matters, because Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light is just that. It's to give everyone a voice. It's to give everyone an opportunity to make things better in our communities, in our country, to be able to tell your story, or to be able to let out your feelings. Whether you're for or against incarcerated individuals, we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you think should be happening. We'd like to hear to find out if what you think is just or unjust. But we want to remember, overseers in the prisons, correctional officers, prison officials, administration, the warden, the commissioner, whoever, we have to remember that they are also human beings. And as I hear all the time about this whole thing going on with Donald Trump and Joe Biden, no one's above the law. Everyone should be held accountable for the wrongdoings. And we are all sinners. Remember, there was a Christ that got hung on a cross to take away all of our sins. So we are all sinners in this country and around the world. We should not be judging those that we don't know. We don't know their situations. We don't know what brought them to doing something so horrendous, or even brought them to doing something that's not horrendous, to be involved with drugs. We have to look at that as well. People involved with drugs and alcohol, a lot of times they're trying to cover up their pain. They're trying to cover up what they've gone through in life that might be so painful. We have to look at those who are not involved with drugs alone, but those who are traumatized as children or adolescents, and they themselves traumatized have psychological issues that weren't addressed. We have to look at those that are in prison for wrongful convictions that haven't done anything, but they've been in the wrong place at the wrong time. We have to look at those who are seriously mentally ill. They're already hurting. They're different from us because they have an illness. And we have to look at these issues too. We have to look at these areas. We should thank God that we have been blessed not to have those illnesses. We have been blessed by God not to be suffering as they are suffering. And we should be thanking God that he has blessed us, rather than using that blessing to hate others, to hate those behind those prison walls who are suffering every day because they're being taken away from their families, or they're being abused or violated, deprived, provoked, harassed, tormented, tortured. There are some people that have no one that knows what's going on in their lives behind those prison walls. You know, I think about them all the time because I wonder. Some prisoners have at least one person or two people that might be trying to help them. But there's people behind those prison walls that have no one. And no one knows the pain and suffering they're going through. All I ask is that you have a heart. Use that heart. Not to hate, but to love. Not to hate, but to help. Not to hate, but to pray. Pray for them. Pray for all who are suffering. These targeted individuals do not need to be targeted. But when I know of targeted individuals behind those prison walls that are being punished rather than rehabilitated, I think about the overseers who have the evil spirit within them. Because if they had a heart, their jobs behind those prison walls is to try to help these individuals to better themselves, to rehabilitate, to get healthy physically, spiritually, and mentally. And if they can't do that, then they're not of God. And they're not in the job. They're not in the business to help these individuals. They're in the business to make themselves feel good. We talk about gang members on the streets. There's gang members behind the prison walls. But when we have people who work for the DOC that join forces to gang up on prisoners, to take advantage of their positions in a negative way, they're no different than any gang members on the outside. As far as our legislative members, we need to continue to call them for help. And I'm going to say one thing about one politician I have to say, because I think he's a doggone good politician, and that is Senator Eldridge, Senator Jamie Eldridge. That is one, he works for the seniors, he works for the incarcerated, he tries to help anyone and everyone he can. And I think credit should be going to those who are really trying to do some good work. And Senator Eldridge is one person I respect, I highly respect. There have been others who have started out doing good. I don't know whatever happens, but sometimes when they go up against the DOC and they don't see results with a few phone calls or a couple of letters, they kind of like back away from everybody. And it's not going to make matters better. It's going to give more power to the unjust rehabilitators, as they might say, or corrections. But anyway, audience, I just want to get these pointers out there, and I'm hoping and praying that you will do something to contact your legislative members and just ask them to do something about the mental illnesses behind those prison walls, to do something about the rehabilitation, to try to do more with the rehabilitation, try to have more, and also to do away with facilities or contracted providers like WellPath. And I will continue to talk about WellPath until I see them replace WellPath with competent, experienced, professional providers of the Department of Corrections. I hope and pray that all of you will do that, that you will do something about this, and that you will work with all of us to make a change. And Donna, if you have anything to say, please say it. We have about 10 minutes left, and I'd like to have some words said before we do close.
Hi, Leona. You know, I think I would like to get the statistics. I have seen them previously, but don't have them on hand now. But I believe that, you know, most of the funds that the jails and prisons get goes for the jobs of the correction officers. So there's very little funding for programs. And sometimes there's excuses as well for offering these programs, such as it's hard to get people from the different pods or the units. And, you know, there's just too little emphasis on recovery, on rehabilitation, on giving these human beings a second chance to be productive. And we all need that. We need a purpose. And to have to waste day after day, time after time, there's so much time on their hands with nothing productive, just beats these people down even more. And who knows, it might cause anger, you know, and with time, anger, fear, worry. It's just such an unhealthy situation. And if these correction officers could just, you know, feel like they could be elevated as mentors, as healers in a way, how much better off would they be in their psyche and in their self-worth? You know, it's not just about power and it's not just about punishment, but it's about being a decent human being and being a community of people and just reaching out a hand to those who are fallen.
Thank you. You know what I heard too is that when people are on in maximum secure prisons, the correctional officers that are on those restrictive blocks and solitary and all of that, a lot of them are getting paid more money than the other correctional officers. And so this is why a lot of them prefer to be in maximum and on those areas, because they're getting more money. In order to get that money and keep those blocks filled, they have to keep putting people in those blocks. So does that mean that they're provoking, they're trying to get these people to do worse so that they can keep those blocks filled? You know, I just got something, too, in my email today, Donna, and you might have gotten it, too, about the bills that are out there. They have...
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten that, Leona. If you could send that to me, that would be great.
I will. One of the things is there's a bill in Massachusetts. It's called S and it's 1535/H-2319, an act to ensure appropriate access to medical parole. And then they have another bill, and it's S-1493/H-2325, which is an act related to rehabilitation, reentry, and human rights for incarcerated persons. Now, this one pretty much falls into what we're talking about now, an act related to rehabilitation and reentry. And then there's a bill, S-1545, an act creating an independent correctional oversight office to facilitate the recommendations of the Special Commission on Structural Racism and Correctional Facilities in the Commonwealth. And then S-1544/H-2398, an act to promote equitable access to parole. Another act to reform parole supervision in the interest of justice. An act establishing parole review for aging incarcerated people. An act to strengthen visitation rights of incarcerated people. An act to strengthen family and community connection with incarcerated people. An act to promote rehabilitation, including guaranteed health, treatment, and safety for incarcerated LGBT and plus people, and an act to improve transparency and accountability in correctional facilities. This is what they need, an act to improve transparency and accountability in correctional facilities, and that is Bill S-1477/H-2394. So they talk about these bills, and I'm hoping that these bills will get enacted on and make a difference. Rehabilitation, oversight, accountability, and transparency in correctional facilities. This is what we need. These are just a few. It should be so simple. These requests, these bills, and the enactment of these bills should be so easy. I don't know why anybody would have a problem with these things. So there should be no pressure put on these incarcerated individuals if these things are actually taking place. Okay, so that pretty much does it. That was one email. I'll send these emails to you also, Donna.
Oh, thank you.
You might get them in your email anyway, but I'll forward them to you as well. So, audience, we're going to be closing up pretty soon. Again, I want to thank Donna Wynette, founder of Family Friends. And Donna, you want to once again give your information to the audience before we close. Audience, check out her organization. She is amazing, and they are addressing the same issues that we all want to see addressed in this country, in the state, and around the country. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be focused on. Something has to be done. There is too much mental illnesses going on throughout the country, and even though a lot of us may not think it is happening, it is. There was a couple I know all of you heard about on the news, the mother and father who got, what was it, Donna, 5 to 10 years or 10 to 15 years, 5 to 15 years in prison because of the mass shooting that their son did. I believe this was in Houston, Texas. These are parents that got sent, that are being sent to prison because of some actions their own son did. They said there could have been, the judge said there could have been more done. But we want to also remember the school also was aware of the students' strange actions. So it doesn't just take a parent or parents. It takes the school, it takes a community, like they used to say, to save children from doing wrong, to help them. And a lot of these people in prison committed their crimes, a lot of them, under the age of 25, many under the age of 21. So we have to look at some of these issues, and we need to address it because, as I mentioned earlier, it could be one of your own. No one is immune from tragedies. and tragedies are like lightning. They can strike anyone, anywhere, at any time. So audience, I want to thank you for listening in, and I hope that this will help and help all of you to make a decision to try to do something about it. As I said, you don't have to leave your home. Just pick up the phone, make some calls, or write some letters. And also, join a lot of these groups on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Join a lot of these groups that are trying to help the incarcerated, trying to help those with mental illnesses. And also, a lot of these groups that are just praying, because we need a lot of prayer for what's happening in this country and around the world. So thank you all for listening. Donna, once again, thank you for coming on. And I'm looking forward to you coming on as a guest with some of your members anytime. Thank you so much. Thank you, audience. We are now going to end this episode.